If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Greetings and welcome to Hello Pine Knob, the official podcast for the Pine Knob Music Theater in Independence Township, Michigan. I'm your host, Gary Graff, back for a third season of documenting everything that goes on in one of the country's oldest and busiest amphitheaters. Coming this Friday, August 30th, is Alice Cooper, the Detroit-born Rock and Roll Hall of Fame shock rocker, on his continuing Freaks on Parade tour with Rob Zombie. We can expect more of the same joyfully macabre entertainment this time, too, but with a twist. As is Cooper's wont, an election year brings out some additional shtick in the form of his own presidential campaign as the candidate of his own wild party. As the song says, he, meaning the Alice Cooper character we see on stage, wants to be elected.
Yeah, at the end of the show now, you know, of course we do elected with a big podium, and I'm still in the straitjacket. From Dwight Frye, which is funny. That's the funniest bit of it, is that here's this maniac in a straitjacket going, you could do better, you know, I'm your man. And in some ways, it's true, you know. I mean, it seems like anybody out there could be better than these two guys. It's just a convenient end for the show, and then we come back with Schools Out.
Alice adds that the elected bit has evolved over the years, too.
We used to do a thing where we had, you know, the two candidates come out and do something really silly, and I just got tired of that bit. You know, I just said, let's just make it a hard rock song. Alice in a straitjacket makes the point. Let insanity reign.
Alice tells us that something he's particularly proud of is still touring and performing at a high level 55 years after the release of his first album.
Every time I go on stage now, people are like expecting me to walk through the show because, well, he's 76 now and, you know, and it'll be nice to hear the old guy do this song. And then by the end of the show, they're going, holy crap. That was unbelievable, you know, because I haven't lost any energy at all. I do the same show with maybe, I think the shows are better now than they've ever been.
What does he think accounts for that?
I think it's just defiance. I'm defying that age, you know, and honestly, I really enjoy doing it. I really do like doing this show. I love the audience's reaction. Every single song gets 100%. I mean, that's what the band demands. That's what I demand. And, you know, that's what, at the end of the show, people are going to come back to see it again.
Alice tells us more music is on the way as well.
There's an album that's already done that should be coming out more around Christmas, I think. It's going to be a surprise album, but it's going to be really, it's really good. But let's just put it this way. It turned out really shockingly good.
Once again, Alice Cooper performs Friday, August 30th at Pine Knob with Rob Zombie, Ministry, and Filter. Tickets and other details at 313presents.com. And now for our main story.
If you've been to Pine Knob during the past couple of years, you've noticed that some of the longest lines in the venue are at the merchandise stands, where fans queue up for t-shirts, hoodies, posters, koozies, and all sorts of other items. Many of you listening have probably been part of those lines, in fact. It's a phenomenon that only seems to be getting bigger each season. So we thought we'd bring in Bill Blackwell, president of Blackbird Productions and Blackbird Vending, to talk about it. Bill, thanks for joining us on Hello Pine Knob.
Good morning, Gary.
And how did you get into this racket? How did Blackbird happen?
Well, I will tell you, of course, I was up at Michigan State, go Spartans, and was the concert chairman up at Michigan State. That led to a couple of Bob Seger promotions that led to an offer from Punch and Bob to go on the road as a tour manager, tour accountant back in 1977. and off to the road I went. I also continued to promote shows when Seeger would be off the road. I would promote shows, and there was kind of this seminal moment. Rick Franks, who's currently executive at Live Nation now, he followed me at Michigan State as a concert chairman, and we continued to work together on some side projects. We were promoting a series of Joe Cocker shows. We did the Masonic Temple Theater here in Detroit, and we were doing the Palace Theater in Columbus, Ohio. And the Masonic did very well. We lost money at the Palace Theater on Joe Cocker. And I'm wrapping up. Rick and I leave the box office, and on the way out, I see an associate who I knew in the industry, and he greets me with, "Bill, what a great show. We killed it on merch tonight. It was tremendous." And so as I climb into my car and start driving up I-75 back to Detroit, the light bulb went on my head. I'm like, wait a second. I promoted the show. I lost 20 grand. This guy made money. I got to take a look at this, you know, end of the business. This, maybe I'm missing something here. So it really did kind of, you know, make me look, you know, at that end of the industry. And at the same time, as a promoter back then, losing 20 grand, albeit a lot of money, the dynamics have changed. As you know, Gary, now with ticket prices in the 150, 200, 250, if you make 1,000 tickets misstep, let alone a 2,000, you can be out $500,000 very quickly in the promotion business. So anyhow, that was kind of the light bulb moment moving into merch. And at the same time, the industry was growing and getting a little more sophisticated. And since I already had a promotion company in place, it was kind of easy to move over into the merchandise division.
Yeah, and as I noted at the beginning of this, it seems more popular now than ever. Is that what you're seeing? And what do you think accounts for it?
Yes, I believe part of it is, I think the death of the record to a certain extent helped drive the merch industry before. Gary, as you know, we're the same vintage, is that we would get an album, you would get album liner notes, you would get who the lead guitarist was. There was just a lot more to take in at that time. Of course, there were a lot more periodicals, and, you know, it's what Rolling Stone down to monthly now. So the availability of the fan to access images, likeness of the artist. Now, granted, yes, of course, there is the internet. I know the internet's filled with that, but it's not as permanent. You know, you're not getting the poster. You're not getting that maybe connection you had before with the artist. And I know MTV, again, exists. That was kind of explosive in terms of bringing the artist closer to the fan. But that platform has changed kind of dramatically more into what I've seen as reality shows versus, you know, bringing the artist. So I think, to a certain extent, that is part of the reason, is that this is allowing the fan again to kind of see that image and likeness. And of course, some of these, you know, artists, musicians are artists, and their art is portrayed and their merchandise. And so it's an extension from the artist to the fan.
Do you see, so in that manifesting itself, are we seeing more items, more creativity, a different variety than maybe we saw 10, 15, 20
years? Yes. Yeah. And it's, I will say, as the president of Blackbird, it is, you know, the deeper product lines are always a challenge for us because, you know, oftentimes, you know, of course, at Pine Knob, we have permanent locations. We end up in festival situations. You're in these very challenging to, you know, you're in an outdoor, weather is an issue for the artists that are bringing in 60, 70 items. And I would point to Niall Horan, who had the most successful merchandise sales of the summer, only having 5 different styles. And as you pointed out, we are at Blackbird sensitive to the lines. And the deeper the product line, of course, then you're giving the consumer a lot more decision making. But we do not develop the product lines. The artist does. And oftentimes you get into a creative meeting, and if there's 5 or 6 band members, they all have a vote. And next thing you know, you've got 20 different designs. But it does lead to the longer lines. And I know we get feedback on our point of sale systems, you know, you don't want the fan to miss half the show because they're waiting in the merch line.
Tell me about some of the more unique items you've seen recently.
Yeah, we've seen everything. I will say this. The amazing thing about it is that the concert tour tee is still the hands-down winner. And that is a black t-shirt with an image and likeness of the artist with the tour dates on the back. There can be the coolest t-shirt in the world, but if they don't have the tour dates on the back, the fan wants, they want to see it. They want to see that they're the date. The Clarkston, Michigan, Detroit, Michigan, wherever that event is at, that they are marking that they were there. But, well, I mean, I have seen everything. I mean, we had perfume the other night. We have we've seen coffee. Of course, now rolling papers, condoms, we have seen it all.
I've noticed that recent shows by Bruce Springsteen, for instance, and the Rolling Stones have done this, is a dedicated t-shirt for that night. Do those,
yes.
What you mentioned about tour t-shirts, something that commemorates that day or that night specifically, are those always very popular?
Yes, indeed. They are indeed. And often some bands go to great length. They will get an artist, either a local artist, screen printer, that will incorporate, you know, maybe even, you know, bumping up on some copyright issues, but they might incorporate the Lions or Red Wings, the Pistons logo, the colors. And Eminem has done that to a great success. No, I think it was at a Comerica show, but he did one of his shirts in maize and blue and one of his shirts in green and white, and they were, you know, huge sellers, of course.
To that end, too, we've seen, it feels like an explosion in posters being sold, and often those are commemorative to the date as well. What's been going on there?
Yes, and again, I kind of do point back to the lack of the, you know, I know vinyl has made a comeback, but it's, as you probably know, that's not as pervasive as it was when that vinyl was our only image. And of course, again, the artist was able to deliver part of their art, part of their artistry through their album cover art. But posters are huge. And again, a lot of it directed with, you know, some great artists and screen printers that will incorporate the Motor City, Motown, sports teams, et cetera. And oftentimes numbered, and the collectors will come out there. Metallica's fans are legion on their poster. They have to they assign a security representative to monitor the sales because so many of the fans that are out there, you know, trying to get 7 or 8 and then hit on eBay the next day to sell at a profit and a margin.
Yeah. Now, when an artist brings posters, is Blackbird responsible for the tubes, or do the artists provide those?
The artist will bring the tubes. Yeah. I mean, the tubes are, you know, the collectors really like that. Sometimes, you know, some people don't want their posters rolled for just the idea that there could be a bend, the real true purist. But sometimes they're sleeves, sometimes rubber bands, sometimes tubes, yes. Yeah.
So take me as briefly as you can, but without missing anything, through a day in the life of Blackbird and merchandise at Pine Knob. When, you know, when does it all start and
right.
How does it roll out?
So, the shows, there is a business model. There is a bit of a science. We like to be hopefully 2, 3, 4 weeks into a tour because by that time, sales patterns are established. So our management team will advance. We will call the artist tour rep. What are you averaging per head? They will send us, you know, a list of their product line, percentage breakdown of what has been sold. And so we can prepare for it. And then, you know, we discuss how many stands. You know, one area that, of course, we haven't touched on yet is, as you know, the VIP experience is becoming a very, very big part of the touring element. Back, of course, when I started, there was a guest list, and people were on the guest list and they're on a backstage list, and there would be, you know, basically friends and family and super fans, and they would be milling around backstage, and there would be some beer and a few hellos, and, you know, off you go. And the new touring model, of course, is to turn that into a VIP experience, everything from sound checks to meet and greets, photo ops, et cetera. And part of it is early merch shopping, which that kind of I'm leading to the dynamic of, you know, we, some shows we could check in as early as, you know, 9:10 in the morning, noon. I would say our average check-in is at 1 o'clock with an experienced team. And in this day and age, again, back in the day, you know, merch, there'd be a few boxes of merch thrown on the back of a rider truck. Now, you know, these major tours like the, you know, Niall Horan and, you know, many others, we just had Glass Animals the other night. They have their own semi out there. And we will, you know, check in that merchandise at noon. Everything has to be inventoried, you know, every button, every T-shirt, every sticker, every decal, everything gets counted, then it gets displayed. And, you know, certain tours will have an artistic director of how they want the shirts presented at each stand. And then sometimes there's a little politics, you know, as you know, some of the tours, it's challenging to us when we get, you know, when Live Nation will book 5 or 6 metal acts because they are famous for their designs. And I know you when you walk up to that merch stand, you will see sometimes 30 or 40 different designs kind of, you know, crammed into a space. But all of that comes into play in terms of when we have to check in, get it displayed, and then, you know, be ready for doors at, you know, again, when VIP doors are, and then the general admission doors.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. 1, it's $15 a month. 2, seriously, it's $15 a month. 3, no big contract. 4, I use it. 5, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
I would gather too, there is a system of refilling as you run out of stuff.
Yes.
Is it controlled chaos? You know, do we see people running around with boxes on their heads? Or
yes, I mean, there is, you know, to a certain extent, some of the stands can only hold so much merch. I mean, but, you know, we used to have walkie talkies. Now, of course, everyone has an iPhone. So the stand manager will be, you know, aware of where they're at with inventory. But every now and then there will be a surprise, and, you know, the touring tour director will say, oh my God, you know, the tank top has been a stiff in the last 3 cities. You know, Detroit's killing it with the tank top. The one thing Detroit's known for, I think it's, I should say Michigan, is our Michigan weather is we like our hoodies here. And part of it is no matter how warm it is during the day, it tends to cool at night, especially in Clarkston at Pine Knob. The weather will cool, and, you know, the hoodies are, we are constantly asking to have them issue more hoodies because they are a big selling item here.
Absolutely. So at Pine Knob, people can find merchandise stands where?
There's 3 to 4 stands at Pine Knob on certain younger artists, even though the doors aren't until 5:30. The fans, the kids will show up at noon because they want to be there and they want to be first on the hill, or they just want, you know, to kind of tailgate, whatever. So then we will have an outdoor stand, you know, set up on those shows. But we have, you know, location, of course, behind the hill. There is a location at the west gate. There's a location at the east gate. And then, you know, sometimes depending on the demand, and again, as I said, that, you know, we will get in the advance. The tours give us what they call a per cap, meaning if in Chicago there was 15,000 people and the gross was $300,000 in merchandise, that is called a $20 per head per cap. And that gives us in Detroit an idea of what we have to expect. you know, when we need, you know, what we need to put into the stands, what time we, you know, what the restock, et cetera. But at times there is controlled chaos, yes.
What is a good night? I mean, you mentioned that per head figure. What's considered a good night in the business?
Well, it has changed dramatically. And of course, I maybe sound defensive here. We at Blackbird do not set the prices. The tour, you know, the artist sets the prices. As there has been in the ticketing end of our industry, there's definitely some inflation going on. Of course, to date myself, when I started, there were $10 t-shirts out on tour. And I remember when, you know, they went to 15 and then someone, I think Fleetwood Mac went to 20 and people like, oh, no one's going to pay 20. Well, as we sit here today, 45 and 50 has become a pretty standard number. But I mean, you're seeing grosses that are, you know, pretty amazing. I mean, you're to at Pine Knob, at least, you know, of course, yeah, we're at, you know, 15,000 seats and, you know, you're seeing grosses above 300, 400,000, you know, dollars in merchandise, which is pretty significant.
Yeah. To that end, with the prices, one of the fixtures at concerts is sometimes before, but, you know, a lot of times after, you will, as you're driving out, you know, on the road, in the parking lot, even, you will see people offering t-shirts priced considerably less than what you see inside. We should not be buying those for a number of reasons, correct?
That is correct. I mean, yes, I think the term still used is those are bootleggers out there. And it used to be a little bit more of, oh, there are some college kids that are out there, you know, printing up some Doobie Brother t-shirts from the, you know, fraternity, trying to make some beer money. But it is for several reasons. I mean, one, the quality of the shirts, they are usually some really poor secondary quality. The print of them is bad. And the individuals that are selling them, oftentimes, because they do have interaction with the Oakland County sheriffs out there, have some, we'll just say, criminal records that I wouldn't want anyone's sons or daughter really interacting with out there. And of course, it's unlicensed. You know, the band is receiving, you know, no royalties from it. But most importantly, I think the consumer is getting bad product. But I will tell one funny story. On now that I've given the serious part of bootlegging myself, the first concert t-shirt I bought was a bootleg t-shirt. And I was at Michigan State. We get tickets to go see Paul McCartney and Wings playing the old Olympia Stadium on Grand River in Detroit. And of course, I was young in the, I think I was 19. So in defense, I was pretty young in the industry at that point. I depart. There is a guy on Grand River there. I buy a Wings t-shirt. And I think for the price of $5 at the time, really to date myself. But I get back to Michigan State, wear it once or twice, and eventually do laundry. And all of a sudden, what's you know, it's a Wings logo. And I look, well, what is that? And someone said, that's Cat Stevens. And the bootleggers obviously did not have a good run with Cat Stevens. So they ended up bootlegging the Wings logo, or screen printing the Wings logo over Cat Stevens. So I've kept that shirt. That's in my Hall of Fame. So
that's great. That's kind of like the stories about the gold and platinum albums that artists get. If they ever break the case open, they put it on and it's not their album.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard stories of like metal bands having Barry Manilow's record. Yeah. And yes. I've heard that story.
That's great. So what's your kind of sense of the future for merch, onward and upward?
Yes, I think, well, and I think I would say the other thing is this, I would say, was out to dinner with Kim, you know, recently, and was at, you know, Ruth Chris Steakhouse, which, you know, I've required to, you know, take a shower, put on some dress clothes, and, you know, a night out, you know, all of a sudden I look over and, you know, a guy is rocking a Metallica t-shirt next to me in cargo pants. So I think the casualization of dress codes, you know, whether it's at GM, you know, casual Friday, guys are wearing jeans and polo shirts, down to being at Ruth Chris and the guy's rocking a Metallica t-shirt. I think you know, were before, it was like, well, I can wear this concert t-shirt to the next concert I go to. Now people are, you know, kids are wearing them to school. People are wearing them to work. So that is part of it, I believe. But I also think, and the other thing I think, Gary, and again, as we've seen, you know, as the Stones continue on, the Eagles, I guess, kind of on their swan song, you know, Elton John, I think there is this kind of drive of the baby boomer set to say, I want to, you know, this was my youth, this was the music of my youth, and if this band is leaving the road, I really want to kind of mark that occasion and kind of where is this, you know, marker in my life, I'm going to get a t-shirt.
And you see that happening too in, you know, places like Target or and other department stores are carrying band, you know, musician, artist t-shirts, but there's still something I think that's more appealing about getting something when you're at the show, isn't there?
Yeah. And totally. I mean, I think there's obviously when, you know, there is the community, you know, you're singing along and there is that whole aspect and, you know, it takes you back. I think oftentimes, you know, music takes you to a certain time of your life and hopefully a good part of your life. And you do want to market. But I will say to that point, it's funny, being in the business, I will see, whether it's in our neighborhood, at the gym or whatever, I'll see a very young person wearing a Ramon shirt, Nirvana, very popular. So I will ask them, I will say, you know, no right or wrong answer, just curious, are you a fan of the music or are you a fan of the t-shirt? And usually it's a little bit of an embarrassed answer, like, well, I like the t-shirt, meaning I really don't know the music. And of course, I mentioned two of the, I think, hugest retail artists in the Ramones and Nirvana, just huge, huge retail artists.
Yeah. Then you can't go wrong with a good logo. You know,
yes. Yeah. The tongue has done quite well for the Rolling Stones.
That it has. All right, then. Bill Blackwell, thank you very much for this illuminating discussion about concert merchandise. Those of you listening may see Bill out at Pine Knob or some of the other venues where Blackbird does vend, or you will certainly see the people who work for him. Make sure you're nice to them. And in the appropriate situation, tip them well. thanks. Thanks very much for being with us, Bill.
All right, Gary. I'm sure I will see you at Pine Knob. Take care.
Thank you, Will.
That's it for this episode of Hello Pine Knob. Our thanks to Alice Cooper and Bill Blackwell for taking the time to chat with us. Hello Pine Knob is produced by Ryan Anderson and is available via Odyssey, the 313 Presents website and social media, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until our next episode, I'm Gary Graff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out on the lawn.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.